Over the weekend, actually, there was talk that he might be delivered into the hands of the British authorities, but that didn't happen. But the danger is certainly there. Can you let's start by you remind us of who Julian Assange is and how he has come to be a focus of all this international hubbub?
Well, if I try to summarize what I know of him, I might not get all of the dates.
Go ahead. We have at least a half hour. Go ahead.
Okay. But one of the most important dates is April 5th, 2010. That is when WikiLeaks, the organization that he founded to make it possible for people to anonymously leak materials, for whistleblowers to anonymously blow the whistle, on the 5th of April, 2010, they leaked the collateral murder video, which was of U.S. soldiers in an American aircraft, I believe it was a helicopter, and they were shooting at Iraqi civilians on the ground. Mm-hmm. And they were doing it as though they were playing a video game. Mm-hmm. They managed to shoot two Reuters journalists, two Iraqis who were working for Reuters in Iraq, and they shot into a van that was taking children to school. This was a big shock, and it was part of the Iraq and Afghan war logs, mm-hmm, that WikiLeaks leaked, which were leaked to them by Chelsea Manning, who was the Army intelligence analyst, mm-hmm, in Iraq, mm-hmm, who made the choice to leak the Afghan and Iraq war logs as a matter of conscience, and then went to prison for 7 years because she had confided in someone on the internet. She was lonely and she confided in someone on the internet who then turned her in. Now Chelsea Manning is back in prison she's back in jail. Uh-huh. Some distinction there. She's back in jail because she is refusing to testify to a grand jury that has indicted Julian Assange.
Uh-huh. If I can just interrupt you there, you know, when we think of the Nuremberg trials after World War II, one of the things everybody said was, don't tell me you were just taking orders. That can't be a defense. You're supposed to do the right thing. And you're supposed to, if you see a crime, you're supposed to note it or stop it and make an effort. And here's Chelsea Manning doing that. And, of course, WikiLeaks benefiting us all by passing along evidence of a crime. But now the tables have been turned, and the bad guys are the people reporting and the people who felt in their conscience, and actually, according to the military system of justice, they're supposed to say something.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And the war criminals are on the outside prosecuting and judging of those who blew the whistle.
Mm-hmm. This is really remarkable.
Now, if you go to the WikiLeaks website, wikileaks.org, and you click on leaks, then you can browse through the batches of leaks that they've released. And people, writers, journalists have used these, historians have only touched the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. There is so much material here. I believe on their 10-year anniversary, they said they had released 10 million documents. The ones that I have made most use of in my work are the diplomatic cables, which were also leaked by Chelsea Manning at the same time that she leaked the Iraq and Afghan war logs. Mm-hmm. And they include diplomatic cables from embassies and other diplomatic missions around the world, including quite a few from the African Great Lakes region. So I have used them a number of times in my writing on Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Mm-hmm. And let's see, with regard to those, to the diplomatic cables, you need to understand something that Julian Assange explained in one of his television interviews. He said that the diplomatic cables that they have are not the most top secret. They're maybe classified, declassified, confidential, but they're not top secret. And he said that those of us reading them would therefore see gaps. So for example, I don't see any, I've never found any diplomatic cables in the WikiLeaks release from Rwanda in 1994 or earlier. I can't remember the very last date, but it's really, I think it's prior to the 90s. And there are no cables from Kinshasa or Goma during the First and Second Congo Wars. Okay. And not on the day that Laurent Kabila became the president of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, expelling Mobutu, not on the day that Laurent Kabila was assassinated, or the day that his adopted son, Joseph Kabila, became president. There are one of the interesting things about the Congo leaks is that they're very often about transportation. And it's because the colonialists and their collaborators never built a modern transportation network to, in the interest of developing a modern industrial economy in Congo. Instead, they were just concerned with getting the resources out. So these discussions of transportation networks are obviously in large part about that. And I wrote about one. I called it Evacuate the Coffee, a white supremacist classic, because this was a report from a diplomat in Goma that some tons of coffee that had been sitting in some sort of warehouse or warehouses in North Kivu province had been evacuated. I mean, that's actually the word that they used. Yes, the coffee had been evacuated.
Yes, safe, and they could all relax. Did they evacuate the cream and sugar? By the way, people should read these documents. When you look at the real deal, the real things, it's often a shock what they are talking about and what is what's important to them. I mean, that it really is part of this thing of, you know, transparency, so that people can understand how officials work. I mean, of course, that's the last thing they want us to know. And bless Assange's heart, he's made it possible to share these. Can I ask you, is it...
Wait, let me finish.
If you've got more embarrassing details about Congo, I'm all ears. Yes, go ahead.
Okay, well, just to finish the story about the evacuate the coffee dock, that diplomat then said there was a double advantage to this because since the coffee was being flown out from Goma to Mombasa, shrimp could be flown back and the tourists in Goma leak anonymously. And WikiLeaks has never busted a source and never had to retract anything it's published.
No, that's it. That is the most telling thing. By the way, he has won awards for this, for his work, has he not?
Tons of awards. He's won every important journalism award I can think of.
And yet, there's a kind of a muted treatment of him in all the mainstream media. And I wanted to ask you this. Is it because the crossroads here seems to be Hillary Clinton and the damage done to her, allegedly, by the WikiLeaks, in that people saw conversations between her and other officials, actually bearing on Bernie Sanders, I believe. Is this what put the kind of the, pardon the metaphor, but death warrant on him?
Well, it's what turned the neoliberal establishment so fiercely against him. Someone had to be blamed for Trump's election. The Democratic Party wasn't going to take responsibility. And what John Pilger calls the liberal class, those who typically see the Democratic Party as our best hope here, turned on WikiLeaks, even if they had applauded his release, the releases about Iraq and Afghanistan, and applauded Chelsea Manning. They blamed him for Trump's election, which was ridiculous anyway. I mean, for one, I think it's unlikely that the Leafs turned the tide in that. What they probably did was alienate, but what was most likely to have had some impact is that they alienated Bernie supporters because they revealed that the DNC had conspired to steal the nomination from Bernie, Sanders.
Which is by the way, was very crucial for practitioners and participants in American democracy. You yourself, you know, the experience with the Green Party, the Sanders challenge, that was highly enlightening, all that debate. And when people said, for example, to the Sanders supporters, the person who did you in was a functionary of Hillary's, and here's the record. I mean, that was a very sobering experience for people who thought, well, we should go along now with the one who strangled us. You know, that was deadly.
Yeah. I understand those who argue that we have to vote least worst. It's not a difficult argument to understand. They'll say we have to save Social Security and Medicare, the minimal accomplishments of the New Deal coalition, which have been under attack fiercely since Bill Clinton brought neoliberalism to Washington. And I understand the other argument, but the argument that you just keep losing ground by voting for Democrats, that's why I vote Green. But you'd have to be that's to say that they have to be shielded. They have to be shielded from the truth so that they won't vote mistakenly.
By the way, it's a history of the country since Jefferson and Hamilton spread in dirty stories, all of them accurate, about each other. Very frankly, I mean, politics is a brawl, and the more information, let the people decide. We're speaking to
exactly.
Ann Garrison, by the way. We want everybody to know that. And she's at sfbayview.com. All her articles there on Assange are all lined up and very readable.
Also at blackagendareport.com.
And I'm sorry, didn't get to that one.
What? I said also at blackagendareport.com.
Black Agenda Report. And on the matter of people speaking up, I guess it's noteworthy. You commented on it. Pacifica had a discussion and decided they would issued a statement in support of Julian Assange. That's kind of important.
Yeah, it was the Pacifica National Network. Yes, I think it was very important. I worked on it. Uh-huh. I mean, this is an unparalleled release. WikiLeaks has made an unparalleled number of primary source documents available that historians and journalists will be going over for many years to come, assuming there are years to come. Primary source documents are the stuff that real investigative journalism based on.
Yeah, and Pacifica has a special history of opposing war. I mean, its founders, certainly, they were pacifists, right? And we all owe Julian Assange a great debt that he's allowing us to have primary sources, and we can make of them what we like.
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes I just go to the site and browse, and quite recently, I was on the site and I scrolled down and came across one that was about a scandal in which a company that was involved in negotiating contracts having to do with some federal legislation designed to employ disabled people, particularly severely disabled people. And it turned out that this was being abused by corporations who were using it to hire people who were just barely disabled. I mean, there are many things that can get you on a list qualifying you as disabled, including taking a few psych meds. And the companies abusing this most were defense contractors. Oh. Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman.
Just happily taking advantage of the system.
Yes. Yes. And so
kind of like Boeing.
Kind of like Boeing. Yeah. So they weren't getting enough of our tax dollars as it is.
Yeah. Well, that's, they pay people to see if they can get more. We're speaking to Ann Garrison. I want to make sure we talk about this. We're talking about solutions, what can be done to save Julian Assange. And I think you've written about it. There are those who say that they're trying to get Australia involved because he is a citizen of Australia. Why can't they? Is there any discussion in Australia that you know of to say, well, bring him home to Australia. If he's guilty of something, let Australian government prove it or charge him.
Australia has not been supportive at all, especially since the 2016 election. And Australia's a client state of, it's a NATO state, a client of the U.S. Empire.
Mm-hmm. And moving on, Switzerland. There's a canton.
There is a canton
in Switzerland. I mean, after all, didn't they save Jean-Jacques Rousseau? Assange is in that category.
My history is weak on that.
Uh-huh.
But if you say so, I'm sure you're right. It is true that the right and left parties in Geneva united to pass some sort of legislation that would then require the national legislature of Switzerland to vote on whether or not to give Assange asylum, whether or not to offer it to him. However, getting him from the Ecuadorian embassy in London to Switzerland would be the big challenge, even if they did vote to do that.
Sure. Yeah,
because Mike Pompeo said that WikiLeaks should become the target practice. Primary target practice for cyber warfare, something like that. I'm sure I didn't get it word for word, but
that's certainly the language he was looking for. They're all trying to top each other with their belligerence and threats. By the way, some nice.
Yeah, he called WikiLeaks a hostile state intelligence agency. a hostile non-state intelligence agency.
Wow. An intelligence agency. It's not a state. Well, that'll keep him up awake at night. He's created a ghost. It's talking to Ann Garrison. Just to make a little list here, I'm interested in all the lies told about Julian Assange or all the little tricks. The Guardian still has not acknowledged, have they, that they ran a front page story saying that this man Manafort had a meeting, personal, face-to-face with Assange?
Yeah, and they've still not retracted that. And
that's
that's
a respectable newspaper, they said.
I don't know. I don't know if it ever
quotes,
was.
Quotes, italics, yes?
Yeah. They sued. After they did that, WikiLeaks made a statement that if that was true, they could have the Guardian could have their founder's head on a platter.
Yeah.
And then they started raising money to sue the Guardian about it. It turned out, I believe, that Manafort had actually been involved in some negotiations in Ecuador to get Assange out of there.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's one of these international fixers.
Mm-hmm. There was the claim that he had been in contact, and this has been shown to be false, with the famous Roger Stone. Again, this flies through CNN, New York Times, Washington Post. But the truth doesn't catch up with that malarkey, because, in fact, there was no contact.
No, not at all. And Roger Stone is such a fool, he's not even worth talking about. He got all kinds of press, but he was trying to attract attention to himself by saying that he had contact with Assange, and Assange told him that he was about to release material that was damaging to Hillary Clinton just before the Democratic National Convention in 2016. Well, the fact is, Assange himself had said that. He'd gone on television several times mm-hmm. and said that.
So he had simply been following the news, whereas the other people were asleep. So he says it's, the man's going to release something when that wasn't a secret. That was known.
Exactly. Yes, he said he's the intermediary. The way in which he was in, an intermediary is that he saw Assange on television or heard about it, and then he went and told Trump about it.
Yeah.
Or Trump's people.
Yeah. So
that makes him an except they blame this WBAI, Pacifica WBAI journalist, Randy Credico, who had produced a series, a radio feature series on WBAI about Assange.
Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate the hysteria around this, but there has been. You must have taken heart. I was very impressed at how quickly people rallied to Assange when they heard he was going to be picked up. And I guess that would be our kind of our last point is that that reaction seemed to have sobered the Ecuadorians about the idea of moving him. What's your interpretation of why it didn't happen this past weekend?
Nobody knows. Mm-hmm. We're not going to know. And I'll try to say something quickly about responding to these emergencies. There've been several times when people thought, well, okay, this is it. Another one was when a plane typically used for rendition flew out of an airport in around Washington, D.C., to London,
mm-hmm.
and it returned without any explanation either ways, but people were concerned about that. This time it was cited as a high-level source within the Ecuadorian government that was cited as the source of the news that he would be removed within 3 days to a week.
Mm-hmm.
Within hours.
Many South Americans had just had it to their eyeballs with Trump and his gang. And so the idea of the Ecuadorians surrendering it would probably offend all the South Americans.
It would certainly offend those who are still part of the Bolivarian Revolution. I mean, and which has supporters still in Brazil. Which has been flipped the other way. Even Trump even suggested that they should make Brazil a member of NATO.
Yeah, we've heard about that. Actually, yeah. We here are offering Canada's spot in NATO to Brazil.
People can't just. There aren't a lot of people who can go and stay outside the embassy constantly.
Mm-hmm.
But they seem to have, his support network seems to at least have a few people there all of the time so that they can transmit any messages about what they're seeing happening.
So all of us should stay alert and watch the various sites. and we really appreciate your time. People,
could I tell you two more things?
Absolutely.
Just real quick? Okay.
Sure.
After this fear that he might be taken away within hours or days last week. The UN Rapporteur on Torture said he was concerned about it. He was concerned that Assange might be tortured in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And the UN Committee on Arbitrary Detention
mm-hmm.
also repeated their conclusion that he had been arbitrarily detained. And so those two actions from within the UN may have had a significant difference, too.
Very good point. And the threat of torture, you could be out of the mouth of Mr. Pompeo. You just quoted him. And the way Trump talks about treating people in Guantanamo and elsewhere. Anne Garrison, your writing on this subject is very, very helpful. I hope people go to sfbayview.com to read it and Black Agenda Report. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
Talk to you later, Phil.
Okie doke. Bye-bye. This is Taylor Report, just like we said, CIUT 89.5 FM, and we have an announcement to make. Sid Ryan is going to be launching his book, A Grander Vision, My Life in the labor movement. I'd call him, personally, I'd say he's the life of the labor movement. It's, if it has a heartbeat, it's Sid Ryan. Otherwise, it's missing in action. Sid Ryan was former president of the OFL, as many know, and QP, outstanding labor guy. And he's going to be speaking and launching his book April the 23rd, Lula Lounge. That's the Lula Lounge, 1835 Dundas West. The doors open at 6 o'clock. Then the event will start at 7, and you can bet it'll be a lively affair because Sid Ryan is a lively fellow. And you can acquire his book there. It's called A Grander Vision, My Life in the Labor Movement. Sid Ryan, April 23rd and April 25th at a different book list. At, I think Phil Condon's claims 777-779 Bathurst.
It's both. It has a dual existence.
Uh-huh.
It's got two addresses.
They cannot make up their mind. All right, a different book list, and it's Ava Bartlett talking about Venezuela. Ava Bartlett, Venezuela, a different book list, April the 25th and 7 o'clock. I think we'll hear some music, and we will come back with the Taylor Report.